across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet by webcast and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Well, I hope everything is okay with you. Last time I recorded one of these, and I think the time before, I was sitting here in the late afternoon with the sun pouring in, and it's hot. It's pretty much the same as I record these words now. And it's not even, as I say these words, it's not even July yet, but by the time you hear this, it probably will be. Astonishing, really. Who knows what the hot months of July and August might bring to us here in the United Kingdom. The only thing is that outside I can see there's a little bit of a breeze, so when I start putting the edit together of this, I think before I do that, I will go for a little walk in that breeze and then come and do what we call post-production here on the show, which sounds very grand, but it's nothing like it really. Just a quick word about something that I announced on my social media and a special edition of The Unexplained. If you take a look at the list of editions, you will see a special there. That is the announcement of The Unexplained Live. It's a cruise that starts in Corfu on October the 28th. I am hosting the events on board that cruise with some very special and very exciting guests. And the cruise experience is provided for you, the holiday that is, by TUI Marella. Please listen to the special edition of the podcast about all of that. It's very exciting. I am very excited about being part of this. So it starts October 28th in Corfu and then goes all the way across the Mediterranean. Beautiful time of year to do it, and a marvelous experience featuring people like Nick Pope, who will fly in from the United States to be part of it. Dr. Melvin Willin, who'll be there for Halloween to talk about the Enfield poltergeist and a lot more things that he's researching. These are people who've all been guests, by the way, on the show. Dr. David Whitehouse, former BBC Space and Science editor, will be talking about the future of space exploration, plus his new book, which will be out around about that time. So well worth hearing from him. He is somebody who's like an A to Z one-stop shop of all of these things. We're also going to have Alan Godfrey, the police officer who saw and experienced a UFO up close and personal, he says, in 1980. They're making a movie out of that story, at Todmorden, of course, on the Lancashire-Yorkshire border. Now, Alan hasn't had the best of health lately, but we are hoping that he will join us to answer your questions and tell you all about it. And you'll be hearing it all, of course, before they make the movie. Plus, Claire Broad, wonderful medium, friend of mine and friend of The Unexplained. She'll be coming too, and she will be talking about the afterlife and many, many other things. Of course, Claire, best-selling author and famous, very, very busy medium these days. So those are the people who are going to be on that. But if you want to get more details of the cruise, then please go to the special edition. There will eventually, very soon, be a special website linked to my main Unexplained website, theunexplained.tv, that will give you all of the details and plus assist you through the booking process. But you can already do that if you go to the show description of that special edition. Okay, that's that. I will tell you more about that, as they say, when news comes in. A shout-out before we get to the guest on this edition. My fiancé and I love to listen to your podcast. We think that you do a great job, thank you, of interviewing the guests. We appreciate your podcast very much. That's nice. We're getting married at the end of July. I was hoping to surprise my fiancé with a shout-out from you on an edition of your podcast, which is what I'm doing now. It would make his day. His name is Alex. We are from Massachusetts, USA, and that comes from Jackie. So Jackie and Alex, you know who you are, getting married in the month of July. I wish you every happiness, and I hope, I know, it'll be a wonderful, wonderful day for you both. Okay, let's get to this. The guest on this edition is Elie Marzulli. He's been on before, of course. Author, lecturer, filmmaker. He's produced 8 books, including the Nephilim trilogy, and done an awful lot of research that I'm sure, if you're listening to this now, you will be aware of. So an update from Elie Marzulli on this edition of The Unexplained. Thank you very much to my webmaster. He and I have been working very hard recently, Adam, for producing the Unexplained website, keeping it going, making sure the shows get out to you, and a lot of other stuff at the moment too. If you want to get in touch with me, go to the website, theunexplained.tv, follow the link, and you can send me an email from there. If you want to comment on anything to do with the show, make a suggestion, tell me anything, and when you get in touch, please tell me who you are, where you are, and how you use this show. All right, let's get to the guest on this edition of The Unexplained now, L.A. Marzulli. Thank you very much for coming back on the show.
Great to be here, Howard. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
And how is your life near Santa Monica at the moment? Is everything okay?
Well, I'm in the Santa Monica Mountains. We're good. It's a little hot here. We killed two rattlesnakes on the property, one yesterday and one today. And I have a rattlesnake fence all around our property. We have 2 acres, so about 3/4 of an acre has got a snake fence around it. But after the fire, some of it was damaged, and we replaced it. And then, of course, March, April, May, we didn't have the front gates up and the front wall up. So I think hopefully they came in during that time, because the snake fence is pretty much bulletproof. I mean, a hawk can drop one in out of its talons by accident. But yeah, we found one yesterday, and then I got one today. Mm. There might be a few more. I kind of know where they are, but you know, it's unnerving. Our dog actually was bitten on Sunday night by the rattlesnake, and that's how we discovered it.
How is he, your dog?
He's on the mend. He's doing good. Anti-venom. The price tag on that was through the roof, but you know, he's a good boy, and he's okay. But you know, they're hard to see sometimes. Mm-hmm. And this morning, my wife got, there's a rattlesnake down by the corner. So we went down together, and I was within 10 feet of it. It was a small one. It was all curled up. And I didn't see it until I was about 8 feet away. She kept pointing, and I go, there it is, because it was in the leaves. It was really camouflaged.
So you have to be so, I mean, I know nothing about rattlesnakes. I am aware from my experience of Africa of the black mamba. And,
oh,
you know, the best thing you can do with the black mamba is just kind of avoid them, which you know, if you're pretty nifty on your feet, you can.
Yeah, the black mambas are, I know that they're incredibly fast, and I've heard stories of people, you know, with a guy at the machete and running on a special chair in front of the Jeep or you know, the truck or whatever. So when the mambas come up, cuts their heads off, and that's... Mm. That's about all you can do.
Well, you know, there would be, it's not a debate that I want to get into here, but I'm sure some of my listeners will be saying there must be a humane way of dealing with them.
And, you know, I get that. But when you're looking at a rattlesnake, all it wants to do is kill you. That's really all it wants to do.
No, I guess they're not much into being reasoned with, I would have thought.
No, but sit down and reason with them. I mean, look in the eyes of a rattlesnake. Mm. They will bite you. That's all there is to it. Mm. That's their program for one thing, bite. And so they strike and they bite. I've heard stories where one rattlesnake kept 4 dogs at bay. I mean, once a dog gets savvy to them, they just keep their distance, because you can't, you know, but there's no way a dog can go up against it. A mongoose can. So, you know, the question is, okay, if I let it go and then it bites my neighbor, right? So how's that working out for you? It's just, you know, I don't like to kill things indiscriminately. I get that. But there's just really nothing good about a rattlesnake, in my opinion.
Well, I can't imagine the fear factor. I mean, you know that our wildlife here, our fauna is pretty tame, I think, by and large, compared with other parts of the world. But who knows? Yeah. With the weather getting hotter, that may change. All right, now, let me just go into your biography here a little, if I may. And you tell me if there's anything wrong in this. Okay. L.A. Marzulli is an author, lecturer, filmmaker, penned 8 books, including the Nephilim trilogy.
13 books.
How many?
13.
It's 13 now, isn't it? In fact, I've written that further down my notes. That's how organized I... You see, I always check these biographies. I always run these biographies past the people concerned, because they're always out of date or wrong. But look, suffice it to say, what, 13 books and, I believe, north of 20 films?
Yeah, exactly. 21 now, exactly.
Right, okay. And how do you describe, for those who are new to you, and you have been on this show before... Sure. You know, cryptozoologists are cryptozoologists, ufologists are ufologists. How would I describe L.A. Marzulli?
I'm a frank supernaturalist. I believe in a supernatural world. I have a supernatural worldview. I believe in the prophetic literature that we read about in ancient texts. I think that that's incredibly telling that there's something else going on here. I believe that there's a hidden history that's been deliberately obfuscated from the peoples of the world, and that's why I am on the trail of the Nephilim, the legendary giants that we read about. I know Hugh Newman and Jim Vierre just have a new book out. I've got it. I've been wading through it. Fascinating book, talking about the giants all over across the pond in England. So they were there. They were also over here in the Americas. And that's why I've created the film series On the Trail of the Nephilim. There's seven films in that. And because I'm a supernaturalist, I look at everything through that lens. My worldview is through that lens, through the lens of a supernatural. Now, if I always go to the natural first. In other words, if there's a natural explanation, let's go there. We always start there. But when we get into things like just take over where you are, the Long Barrows, look at Salisbury, look at the incredible edifices at Stonehenge. And if it starts to get slippery, it's like, well, maybe we're looking at something else here, right? Maybe something else is going on that's been deliberately obfuscated from the people. And that's where my films come.
I mean, we could debate that. I'm sure a lot of people would. But the one thing people couldn't debate and shouldn't debate, really, is the mystery behind these things. And you talked about Stonehenge. I was lucky enough to be driving again past Stonehenge about 6 weeks ago. And, you know, you never fail. If it's a nice day, then these stones just, you know, seemingly on the A303 road, people in the UK will know this, emerge at you from seemingly nowhere. And, you know, you'd have to be a hard heart or somebody who doesn't think at all to not consider the question of who got those there? Who put them there? How did they build those?
And that's what the enigma is. And, you know, modern day archaeologists poo-poo the idea of a race of giants, and I understand that. And yet we have evidence of it, archaeological evidence of it. My work across the pond over this way, right on the Pacific Ocean, there's an island 26 miles off of Los Angeles called Catalina. And I had access to the archives. Cost me $1,000 to get archival access, but I got it. And they had discovered this trunk from primitive archaeologist by the name of Ralph Glidden. And so that's what this made the front page of the Los Angeles Times. And I was there in the archives, and I was talking to John Borogina, who at the time was the curator of the museum. And he said, well, what do you want to see first? And I said, I want to see the pictures. So he went into a vault and took out the museum boxes where many of the pictures were wrapped in plastic to protect them. Over the years, and that's why it's in a temperature controlled vault. So it's all, you know, airtight and the whole deal, but the temperature's controlled. So all this will last for, you know, 1,000 years or whatever. And of course they've got duplicates of everything. Well, I'm there in the archives and I start discovering stuff that doesn't make any sense. Elongated skulls, six fingered skeletons. And then of course the pay dirt was Ralph Glidden standing in front of a skeleton that's in situ. It's not a disarticulated pile of bones. And we had that tested by three different researchers who digitized the photographs. We knew Glidden's height of 5'8". And based on that, we knew that...
do you want to get that call?
No, I do not. It's just the text. Absolutely. Okay. Based on
You're a man in demand. That, but mysteries on Catalina Island, just... while you talk to me about that, a thought came to me about Catalina Island. I've recently spoken with Caroline Corey, who made a very good documentary exposition of the Tic Tac UFO phenomenon and other related phenomena. And the location they went to, of course, was Catalina Island, because a lot of that stuff happened there. So I guess the question that flows from that, and I wasn't going to ask you this until later, but let's do it now since you brought it up. Do you think what you've just been talking about and the fact that there appears to be so much aerial activity near Catalina Island, do you think that those things might be connected?
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind. There are gateways, there are portals, and these entities can travel back and forth through them. That's why in the film that you're referring to, it appears like there's some sort of a gateway or a portal opening up right over the channel there. It's also one of the deepest channels on the planet. I mean, it's really, really deep. So if you want to hide, you go down there. I mean, nobody can find you a couple of miles down or whatever. It's just, we don't have anything that will go down that far without, you know, submerging anyway, without being crushed by the wave. Of course, they do. And they move through the water like they're moving through the air. I mean, 40, 50, 60 knots. I mean, how's that possible? So Catalina, going back to the giants, in my worldview, I look for a unified theory. I look for something that ties everything together. And that's why these ancient prophetic texts that I refer to, it does tie everything together once you come across the line. Once we realize that, wait a minute, there is a connectivity between what we're seeing with the UFO phenomena and all of its parts, whether it's abductions, hybrid programs, cattle mutilations, the tic-tac shape objects appearing, or much larger craft like the Phoenix Lights. I interviewed a gentleman on Saturday, and he saw a craft, guess where? Right over Catalina. And he's on the record. He's got witnesses. He gave me, the guy's really done his due diligence. He contacted people. He's got like 20 witnesses that went on the record through email, via email, talking about their experience with this craft. This thing was all over the place. And it happened like, you know, decades ago. But I think another friend of mine who I interviewed saw the same craft. I'm trying to nail that down. It might be another witness the same day. They're out there. There's no doubt about it. I mean, they're out there, they're doing stuff. And isn't it interesting that, and let me just throw this back at you. In many parts of the world, UFO activity and the revealing of Sasquatch, they go hand in hand. Why is it that we see Sasquatch when people are seeing a UFO and all of a sudden they're Sasquatches? It's like, wait a minute. Are the two related? Absolutely, they're related, in my opinion.
Okay, and of course, those who believe in the manifestations of Sasquatch and the other related creatures, they believe that, some of them believe that there is some kind of supernatural element to this, which makes them as elusive as they are. And of course, UFOs are elusive. There's nothing more elusive than UFOs or UAPs or tic-tac craft, whatever you want to call them. So you're kind of thinking that there's a unit. I mean, it would be nice, wouldn't it? And convenient and calming in some ways, if there was a unifying theory of all things.
Well, I think there is, and it goes back into these ancient texts, the biblical prophetic narrative, which, and I've been a student of that for 42 years, and it's not something, you know, people, and this is problematic, because the moment I say to a lot of your listeners, if I say Bible, you know, click, change the channel, leave the show, you know, I don't want to hear about that, because they equate what's written in those pages to what they see from the clergy and organized religion, which, you know, that's another rabbit hole I won't go down, right? There's no point in it. But what's in those pages, I refer to the Bible as the guidebook to the supernatural.
So which way around, Ellie, did you approach this? I was listening to some other interviews that you've done earlier today. Did you start from a knowledge of biblical texts?
No.
And then find evidence that that validated them? Or did you, you just answered it really, but you went the other way. You went from what you found back to the biblical texts.
Yeah, I was a dyed-in-the-wool New Ager. I mean, for lack of a better term, we throw those terms around loosely. I wasn't a druid, but I was a New Ager, and I had spirit guides. My third eye was open. I was lived in an ashram for 3 years. I was very much involved in Eastern mysticism. Chakras were opened. And I went about as far as you can go. I mean, I was there, and I realized, although I wouldn't be able to articulate that, after 3 years living in the ashram, meditating, giving up meat, fish, and eggs, celibate, living a celibate life, the whole thing. I mean, I did everything for 3 years. And then I went, but I'm still the same schmuck I always was. You know, why am I not changing? Why am I the same schmuck? Why? If I'm attaining enlightenment, and I was, you know, flying around the universe and seeing stuff and all this, you know, stuff was going on. But why am I not changing internally? Why? I mean, if this is enlightenment, you can have it.
Okay, I hear what you say. Of course, to be fair, and balanced about it, there's a good phrase, to be fair and balanced about this, then, you know, there are people who will have been through those experiences that you went through and are profoundly transformed by them. So you're talking about your own experience here. I think it might be my experience too, you know, that I would take on board a lot of you know, spirituality and all of those things, but that fundamentally I'd come back to my day-to-day existence and I'm still the same flawed individual. I just wanted to be fair to people who went through the experiences of spirituality that you went through and were materially transformed. You know, everybody's experience may differ.
And I concur to that. I mean, a perfect example of this is Graham Hancock. If I can use Graham's book, The Supernatural. You know, he writes about taking ayahuasca, and he takes it multiple times. And this is where my unified theory plugs in perfectly. So he's doing ayahuasca. He's trying to get enlightened or trying to find out what the meaning of life is or whatever he's taking it for, just to get an experience. And he pops up out of his body, and there are the grays. And we all know what the grays are. You know, that those are the ones that abduct people and run around in the craft, yada, yada, yada. It's been acculturated. If I said that 30 years ago, you know, maybe 5 or 10% of your audience might know. Now everybody knows the grays, okay? So it's global, unless you're way out in the Amazon someplace, and even then. So he gets there and he's perplexed because the grays are there. He's thinking to himself, what the heck are the grays doing there? Why are they here? I don't get it. And at the very end of the book, and of course, it's a very voluminous book, and it's really well written, and he's, you know, Graham Hancock's incredible, and in some ways a pioneer. So hats off to Graham. But at the very end of the book, he says, whatever's going on, these entities seem to be obsessed with mating with us and creating a hybrid. That's my wheelhouse, Howard. That is my wheelhouse. That ties into my lifelong work on the Trail of the Nephilim, because that's exactly what we're looking at. There's an ancient prophetic text written about 2,500 years ago. So it's back there, right? And it says this, and before I tell you what the text is, that the entity, we'll use that word entity, because people, if I say entity, that's acceptable. If I use another word, it's not acceptable. So it's semantic. So I'll just use the word entity, and I'll use the word alien, because this entity originates off-world. So by definition, it's an alien. Now, I believe it's a benevolent one, and there's another term for it, but I won't use that term. So for the sake of just, you know, bringing in the audience and allowing people to digest it, let's call it for what it is. If it doesn't originate on the planet, it is, by definition, an alien, because it doesn't originate here. So this alien, again, it's not an alien, tells Daniel, this guy that he's communicating with, hey, seal up the words of this book until the time of the end. Okay, so you sit there and go, well, how do we know what the time of the end was? Then he explains what the time of the end is or will be. 2,500 years ago, men and women did not run over the face of the earth, did not run to and fro over the face of the earth, and knowledge did not increase, not like it does now every 6 months, and increases exponentially. And now that book has been opened up, it's unsealed, as it were. So people like me can go in and go, and this is the kicker, it says in that book, their seed, remember, we're talking the latter days, the end of days, end times, as it were. Seal up the book until the time of the end. What does that mean? Not that the world's gonna be destroyed, the time of this dispensation, the time of what we are seeing. And that's a three-hour conversation because it gets into the cosmos.
Do you believe that references to the end, and a lot of people refer to the end times, actually refer more precisely to the end of our civilization in the way that it's configured right now, not the end of everything?
Exactly. When it changes, it will. There's 4 billion people left on the planet when everything shifts, everything changes. So it's not an end, it's a reconfiguring of what we see, a restructuring. And it will be fair and it will be incredibly just. But that passage in where the alien is talking to Daniel, he says, you know, seal up the words until the time of the end. Men will run to and fro over the face of the earth, knowledge will increase. Then he says this, they will mingle their seed with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave to them. So who are they? It's not man's seed. It's not. Their seed will mingle with the seed of men. They will mingle their seed with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave to them. That little phrase is so pregnant with meaning, it's mind-boggling.
Who is not cleaving to whom, though? Are we saying that this previous civilization has mingled with us, and they are not cleaving to us, or are we not cleaving to them? Who's cleaving to who?
Okay, and that's a $64,000 question. So that's why, unless a person understands the cosmic war that we find ourselves in, unless one understands what's in the guidebook of a supernatural, i.e. the biblical prophetic narrative, when they get to a passage like that, they're not sure what's going on. This hails back to the very first chapters of the guidebook of a supernatural, where the dragon is basically, there's a statement. Basically, it says this: your seed will be at enmity at war, talking of a dragon. The dragon's seed will be at enmity at war with the offspring, the seed of the woman. The dragon's seed will be at enmity at war with the offspring, the seed of the woman. The one coming from the woman will crush the dragon's head. You will bruise his heel. My friend Howard Hughes, that sets up the rest of the narrative. And that's overlooked, and people don't understand that. Without an insight and understanding of that text, the rest of it becomes like, what? What is going on here? And of course, when you go into the modern UFO phenomenon, that text is thousands of years old. Let's move into modernity right now. What is happening? I'm not making this up. This is not L.A. Marzulli saying this. This is Brett Baer on the Fox News Network across the pond here in America stating this openly on his show, all right? Then picked up by the other networks. Some women who are taken aboard UFOs find themselves pregnant. Now, he stops right there, but that's my wheelhouse. I've talked to abductees. We interviewed a woman. It'll be in our upcoming film, probably episode 4 or 5. We're not sure. We're actually 1 and 2 are free on YouTube. If you go to my YouTube channel, L.A. Marzulli, open up any text box. You can watch UFO Disclosure, The Coming Great Deception, parts 1 and 2. Part 3 is, I'm actually looking at it as we speak. It's up on my big monitor there, and I'm in the process of editing it. That'll be released in July. It will not be free. And we're working on 4, 5, 6, and 7, and on it goes. We interviewed a woman who was taken at a very early age, multiple times, and she was impregnated 3 different times. And of course, they come and they take the baby in the first trimester. And, you know, she miscarriage again, goes to a doctor, and the OBGYN says, look, we know there was a child. We saw the heartbeat. You know, it was there, or something was going on. And they have no record of it. Well, she knows what happened to it.
But the health professionals who were involved in this, they would have had to involve the authorities then. If there was, if there was a pregnancy, as you say, and that pregnancy simply ended, then even if it was a mystery to them, they would surely have to involve the local authorities, wouldn't they?
No, yes and no. Not in the third month, not in the third month of pregnancy, and not when it seems to be a miscarriage. You know, and then they just kind of scratch their heads and they go, well, wow, that's because she didn't kill the baby. She's distraught. Where did it go? And there's no evidence of it. So it's, and this happened to her 3 times. Howard, the interview is one of the most visceral interviews I've ever done. And I've interviewed a lot of people in the last, 25 years, a lot of people. And gut wrenching. She's very emotional through it.
Well, and then if you have scientific proof of this, if there are scientists who've done whatever I wouldn't know what test they would be, and I wouldn't speculate on what they might be, but if there is scientific proof of that, then don't you have the greatest story ever told?
No, because it doesn't matter. The scientific community, the academic community, the archaeological community, they don't care. How do I know we've proved this? We're going to skip over to our research on the elongated skulls in Peru. Okay, our team was the first team to multiple samples. Hats off to Brian Forrester, who helped arrange that. But our lead archaeologist was Mondo Gonzalez. Richard Shaw filmed it. Chase Klotzy tagged and bagged all the evidence. We took it to three different labs. We had the stuff tested. We took out 58 samples. Out of those samples, okay, 28 of the samples sequenced.
These were DNA samples?
DNA samples. And out of that DNA sampling, 28 of them, sequenced. So we knew where the mitochondrial DNA, where the maternal line came from. And guess what? Many of the samples came from Eastern Europe, Mesopotamia, the Black Sea region, the Levant. That rewrites history because that's not supposed to be in Peru. No way that's supposed to be in Peru. What do the academics do? Oh, it's all contaminated. Isn't that... Well, if it was contaminated, why didn't we get nuclear DNA? And we took Mondo's DNA and my DNA, and so we sent that to the labs, and they tested it. We had one sample from one particular 2,000-year-old mummy skull that we unwrapped that was tested at two different labs, three different times, okay? It came back U2E1, which is Eastern Europe. That rewrites history. Nobody cares. Because it goes against a prevailing paradigm. It's just like we interviewed a gentleman. He sued a university in Southern California because he was fired. Now, this guy went out to a place in Montana, and he was looking for dinosaur fossils. He found this huge Triceratops horn. He took it back to the lab. He opened the thing up. He took samples of it, and he found soft tissue in the Triceratops horn. Well, how is that possible? He published his paper. He didn't say anything about his religious beliefs, his worldview, or anything. He published his findings. He was immediately fired from his position. He sued them and was able to continue his research. There are other research...
Well, I don't have the details of that case to hand, but I'm hearing what you say.
They don't care. I mean, look, the machine that is testing the DNA at the labs does not give a rip as to what I believe or don't believe. It could care less. And we went with the scientific method. This was our hypothesis. We said that giants, there was a diaspora of the Nephilim tribes about 3,500 years ago, according to the biblical record, when Joshua and Caleb go into the what's called the Levant, or the Promised Land, and begin to war against these hybrid entities, because that's what they are. So here's a diaspora. How do we know that? There was a stele on the north shore of Africa discovered by Procopius a long time ago. And it said this: we are they who fled from the face of Joshua the robber, the son of Nun. What the heck are they doing there? Why is it that we find a 4,000-year-old site here in New Hampshire in the United States, which has a stone that was buried in a collapsed chamber on the site, and that stone says, to Baal of the Canaanites in dedication? What is that? And it's written in Iberian Punic, by the way. What is that doing in New Hampshire? It has no place in New Hampshire. So there's all these anomalies that are discovered. People like me with the scientific method going, if the giants left, do we find evidence of that? Well, we find evidence of it in New Hampshire. Do we find evidence in Peru? Could they have sailed to Peru from the Levant?
I was going to ask you this. You know, clearly you're saying that this race was able to travel vast distances.
Absolutely.
A long time ago. So, you know, the question is, the nuts and bolts question is, how did they do that?
Look at Kon-Tiki. Look at Thor Heyerdahl's film or book, Kon-Tiki and also Ra. He proved it, that you could sail, you know, from, let's say, Gibraltar and wind up in the Americas. He wound up in Barbados without a map, without anything. He had a sail, okay? Papyrus boat, jumps on the boat, I think it was like 28 days, winds up in Barbados. He proved it could be done.
That was an amazing expedition. I remember it. In fact, they made a movie out of that, I think.
Yeah,
quite recently, and you know, there were times when they may not have made it, but they certainly did. So it proved that that was possible. So look, the headline news here then is that we look at ourselves today and what we are and the way that we conduct and comport ourselves, and you're saying basically that there is a hidden part of our history and a hidden part of us because our presence is overlaid with another race, the Nephilim, who were here, who made their presence felt and are actually a part of what we are?
Yes and no. They are a part of our history, but we're not genetically linked to them at all. We're not genetically linked to them.
How did they exist separately?
Really good question. This is where it gets into the seed of the dragon. There's an ancient prophetic text called the Book of Enoch. I'm sure some of your readers and listeners, you know, are familiar with that. Found in the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's actually quoted in the biblical narrative. So it's ancient. It's there found, again, found in the Dead Sea Scrolls. When I first read my copy of it, it was 1990 or thereabouts. So there's no internet. You don't go on Amazon and order it anymore like you can now. I had to go to a bookstore, and it was like 2 or 3 weeks before they, you know, could get it to me, that type of thing. So it's, things have changed. But I remember reading it probably in one or two sittings and just completely enraptured by what I was reading, blown away by what I was reading, because thousands and thousands of years ago on Mount Hermon, 200 watcher angels descended in the days of Jared on this mountain. It's in Israel. Mount Hermon is in Israel. I've been there. And below it is called the Wheel of the Giants, Gilgal Raphaim. There's a book, my latest book, number 13 in the series, is called Countermove, How the Nephilim Returned After the Flood. And, you know, look, it's a shameless plug, and I get that. But if people are interested, it'll blow your mind. Because what we see, what happened at Hermon, is a mingling of the seed for the first time. When these entities come down, why are they doing this? This is why Genesis 3:15 is so important. Because your seed, the seed of a dragon, will be at war at enmity with the seed of the woman. He, coming from the woman, will crush the dragon's head. The dragon does not want to lose his kingdom. So, you know, people listen or read about Noah and the flood. What they don't understand is that every culture on the planet has a flood story. The Chumash Indians out here in the Santa Monica Mountains in California, they have a primitive flood story. They have an account in their oral tradition that the world was at one time flooded. So what do we look at? The Chinese have it in their ancient glyphs talking about the flood. So something's going on here. And this is why if a person... I'll try to state it again. When we look at, let's say, Anglican clergy with robes and vestures and buildings and all this stuff, that's mankind putting it in a box and making a nice little ceremony out of the whole thing. People need to understand that that's fine and it serves a purpose. But you're never going to hear what I'm saying in most churches globally. You're just never going to hear it. And that's why even over here in the States, you know, you think my phone would ring. We get invited. I mean, I'm not complaining. We're speaking at churches all over the place, probably about 12 a year. Well, that's kind of a joke. But more and more people are awakening to the fact that there's something else going on here. And unless we understand the seed war, because that's what it is, then we don't understand where we are.
Let's cut to the chase then about this. There was another race, these very tall people. They were able to travel. They were coexisting. Why have they left so few remnants of themselves? And indeed, that leads to the question, why are they not here now? If they were so adept at so many things, why are they not here now?
Howard, let's go back to your first question. Why didn't they leave? There is so much evidence, it's absurd. It's screaming at us, but it's hidden. It's hidden from us. All the giants that were exhumed in the Americas, 9, 10, 12 footers. Og, or Og, king of Bashan, his bedstand was what, 15 feet in length? So he's a 12 to 13 footer. Our work on the giant of Kandahar, which we broke the story, which I was threatened by the deep state for breaking the story, because you're not supposed to talk about stuff like that.
Okay, threatened by the deep state. Did somebody phone you up?
No, it was a face-to-face meeting.
Okay, and you were told not to reveal this.
I was told that, you know, we were on the radar because of our film and that maybe it would be better if I just stopped talking about it. And that was in 2015, after the election over here in 2016, it all went away. But now because just a whole everything that's going on, I backed way off again and very, very cautious. In fact, we stopped doing Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural Report on Rumble Just why poke the bear? Why poke the bear? So let's go to, and back to, because we've already talked about it. Stonehenge is built on an 18 and a half year lunar cycle. Mm-hmm. And this begs the question, how did they know? America's Stonehenge over here in New Hampshire is built on an 18 and a half year cycle. There are parts of Karnak, France, built on an 18 and a half year cycle. The Great Serpent Mound in Ohio, America, is built on an 18 and a half year lunar cycle. I could go on, but you get my point. So let's go back 4,000 years ago. Let's go back 3,000 years ago when Stonehenge, England was built. People have different time dates for that. It's in the state of flux. But let's just look at this. So it's built on an 18 and a half year lunar cycle. So what's incredible about this, and I'm going to pull up my calculator here so I can do the math for us. So 18 and a half years, 18.5. All right, times 365 equal. That's 6,752 days in an 18 and a half year lunar cycle. 6,752 days in an 18 and a half year lunar cycle. So Howard, you and I, 1,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago, whatever the date you want to sign to Stonehenge, England, we go there and we go, yep, we're going to make this site on an 18 and a half year lunar cycle. But I go, Howard, we don't know it's an 18 and a half year lunar cycle. And you go, well, you're LA, you're right. But we know that the moon rises and sets in different places. We see that. So according to Tom, an Englishman who wrote a book about this, you know, you go out and you create a center point and you use stakes or stones and you mark where the sun, where the moon comes up and where the moon sets. And you can do this. But, you know, we're in merry old England and the weather turns foul on us. And after 30 days, we've got, you know, stakes, right? So we've got a stake where the moon came up, where it rose, and a stake where it set. So you've got 6,752 days times two, because you need a stake for each one. Now you've got 13,505 stakes in the ground, and you don't know where you are in the cycle. You don't know whether you're at two, you're five, you're six, and moreover, how the heck do you crunch the data? How do you look at those stakes and go, I think we were here before, Howard? I go, you know, Howard, I can't tell because there's way too many stakes out here. I don't know what I'm looking at.
All right, so what we're saying is that the ancients could have worked those things out if they'd had a computer with them, which they didn't. So somebody or something must have told them.
Guess what? The Book of Enoch tells us exactly where it came from. One of the fallen angelic entities, one of the fallen watcher angels, handed it. It's right there in the text. Showed mankind the course of the moon. And see, this is what I mean by a hidden history. So you take the American First Nation people over here, and you go to their oral tradition. I've done this. And you go, do you have anything in your oral tradition, any tribe in America that talks about the 18 and a half year lunar cycle? No. Do Native Americans, did they know geometry or trigonometry? No. So then how is it when you get to the Octagon Mound in Ohio, which encompasses 50 acres, Howard, it's really big. I've been in it three times. And when you're in it, you have no idea what the heck you're looking at. I know it's an octagon because I've been told that. But
we have to explain what these mounds that you're talking about are. I know there are some in, for example, Louisiana. Some of them look like lopped off pyramids covered in earth, don't they? But they're unexplained. They're a mystery.
A total mystery. And yet we know who did them, in my opinion. That's where Ram Trail of Nephilim. So the Octagon Mound is constructed of eight burrows, eight mounds, okay? And the mounds range from 3 to 4 feet high to something even higher. But get this, there are gates in the mounds, in the Octagon Mound. It encompasses 50 acres. There are also, it's built on an 18 and a half year lunar cycle. You don't know what you're even looking at unless you're in the air. And when you're in the air, you realize that it's an uneven octagon. Two of the sides are uneven. So it begs the question, now we're looking at advanced geometry / trigonometry. We're looking at knowledge of the precession. Native Americans did not do this. And when you go to the tribes and you say, Do you have anything in your oral history which shows that Native Americans knew geometry? They look at you and like you've got three heads. No, we did not know geometry. So when you go back to the archaeologists, they throw up a straw man argument. Well, it's there, so they must have known it.
What about the Mayan civilization? That's in your area.
Well, it's the same thing there. When you go to places like Teotihuacan, right, and they know that 18.5 year lunar cycle, it's the largest pyramid on the planet. The base is not the height. Giza is taller, but Teotihuacan's base is larger. Pyramid of Sun, Pyramid of the Way of the Dead. Then, of course, the Temple to Quetzalcoatl. And archaeologists are puzzled and stumped because they call them the Teotihuacanos. They don't even know who these people were. And we hear this over and over.
You're talking about Teotihuacan, which is called by the Aztecs the City of the Gods.
City of the Gods.
And, you know, I know that in one of your presentations, you posed the question, which you've just kind of done. You know, nobody quite knows how that got here.
No. And when you're there, it's flipping mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling what this thing was. 18.5 year lunar cycle, where does it come from? Why go through the trouble? Because it is the city of the gods, but the gods who are, you know, the ancient aliens theorists talk about, and we're on the same page, except that they have a different conclusion than I do. We've been visited numerous times. There are entities which are commingling with us, even now in modernity. That's the whole abduction phenomena. But that happened in antiquity. And then these civilizations vanish. And there may be an explanation on that, which is conjecture on my part. But if you want to get to the unified theory, you got to understand that these are not extraterrestrials from Zeta Reticuli. They're not. They're interdimensional beings. They're late, or not the late, but Dr. Jacques Vallée, the late J. Allen Hynek stated the same thing, that this was more akin to some sort of an interdimensional entity than an extraterrestrial one. And that, of course, is where I after studying the phenomena for, you know, all my life, essentially, but professionally for over 30 years, and written books and produced films on it, because it all dovetails together. It all dovetails together.
Here we are in 2022.
Yes.
There is a lot of excitement about so-called disclosure. We've had hearings only recently in Washington, supposedly more to come, and more people testifying and giving their 2 or 3 cents worth. How does all of that tie in with what you're talking about, do you think?
Well, it does. When they show up, everything changes. That's why I've titled the book, or the film rather, UFO Disclosure, The Coming Great Deception of a Luciferian Endgame. Everything will change. The entire planet will change. It will do a 180 degree flip. You thought COVID changed things. Wait till they show up. It changes everything. Absolutely every dynamic.
And is this imminent, do you think?
Oh, yeah, very, very much so.
How imminent?
Well, people ask me that all the time. Let me back up. We're on the ninth rung of the ladder of disclosure. How many rungs are there? There's no way of telling, but we're on number 9. So I can go over them if you want, very briefly, for each rung, what they are. And this was revealed. It started in 2017 on Tucker Carlson, Commander David Fravor, of the Tic Tac Shape, UFO sighting. He's on Tucker Carlson. He doesn't have a book out. He doesn't have a DVD. Essentially, he's unknown publicly, at least at that point. And he's on Tucker Carlson's show, which begs the question, why is he doing there? And they've got, which at that time on Tucker Carlson's show, was a video showing the tic-tac-shaped object. And Commander David Fravor is telling Tucker that this thing was unlike anything he's ever seen before. And Tucker asks him, what, in your opinion, was this? And Commander David Fravor says, whatever this was not from this Earth.
And let's be fair about that. It wasn't only him saying that. There were a lot of other people who witnessed that. I mean, you saw that going back to Caroline Corey's documentary. There were other people who saw that and paid the price for having talked about it in, you know, ridicule and all of the all of the personal consequences that that come from those things we know about. So, you know, there was a groundswell happening from 2017. Let's agree on that.
Yeah, and the thing is, something changed. The dynamics somehow changed. And the reason why I was saying that, you know, circling back, trying to get to the point that, you know, Fravor at that point was not a public figure, which is a much kinder way of saying that. I stand corrected. So he's not a public figure.
But why should he have been a public figure, though?
Well, my it doesn't matter. My point is this. Why him? How does he get on Tucker Carlson's show? That's my point. Who calls up Tucker's producer and go, we'd like to have this man with a film clip on your show next Friday talking about the UFO phenomena? And you can see Tucker was completely like, when he's introducing him, he goes, UFOs used to be the stuff of tinfoil hats and conspiracy theories, but maybe we shouldn't think this anymore. I'm paraphrasing, but that's how he introduces him. Commander David Fravor joins us, and then he does the interview. And Commander David Fravor, first rung on the ladder, whatever this was not from this earth. Second rung on the ladder, Luis Elizondo, on Tucker Carlson's show. We have in our possession, Elizondo states, we have in our possession metal from crashed UFOs. Whoa, third rung on the ladder of disclosure, Chris Mellon on Tucker Carlson, but he also hit other news agencies, the same thing. We tested the metal. There's isotopic ratios found in the metal, not made on this earth, not found on this earth. Fourth rung, which was huge. The Pentagon states on the record, broadcasted, that we have, the Pentagon has in its possession off-world vehicles not made on this earth. You would think that people would stop and go, wait a minute.
Hang on, when was that?
Oh, that's years ago.
We have off-world vehicles.
I'll say it again. Off-world vehicles not made on this earth. That's from the Pentagon.
Okay, well, while you're talking, I'm going to look that up online. But that's,
please do. It's right there. Okay, rung number five. What was rung number five? Oh, yeah, rung number five is, let me just get this straight. Rung number five is the Pentagon a year ago releasing their report concerning the UFO phenomenon, 9 pages. Okay, and, you know, they released the 9-page report to the public, and it's basically one big nothing burger. Out of 144 cases that they studied, they were only able to disprove one case. So we have 143 UAPs or UFOs that were unidentified, don't know what they are. So rung number six is NASA contacted the clergy to try to get them involved to find out what is going on with the phenomena and how it might relate to the revealing of a so-called extraterrestrial presence. What would people do? What would people of faith do? How does that affect the millions of people worldwide? So they were hired by NASA to do that. Rung number seven, and this is my wheelhouse, by the way, rung number seven was the Bret Baier, Fox News, stating that women, we talked about this a little earlier, women are being abducted. They find themselves on UFOs. Some women who are taken on aboard UFOs find themselves to be pregnant. And that they never explored it. Well, how did they get pregnant? Well, was it, you know, it's like, was it in vitro fertilization, or did they have sex with a hybrid? What are we looking at? They just kind of back off of it. All right. So rung number eight is once again, Tucker Carlson sits down with two butchers, professional butchers, looking at the cattle mutilation phenomena. And they state whoever is doing this is acting with surgical precision on these cattle. The phenomenon has been going on out here in the West.
Oh, indeed, and going on here in the United Kingdom. It is claimed, you know, there is, as you say, surgical precision about these things. And yeah, how does that happen in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah, and the blood is drained. So that's number eight, and number nine, which just happened several weeks ago. Congress talked about the UAP phenomena, which I said it was going to be a nothing burger. But the bottom line is this, they're talking about it. So rung number 10, 11, 12, no idea. Footage of the Roswell crash, maybe. That would be huge. I'd love to see that. I actually talked to several people. Both of these guys were high-level military officials, retired. And one was a deathbed confession that he was this guy was an intelligence officer. He was well up there in his age when he passed away. A month before he died, he spilled the beans to his caregivers. And these people were very stalwart, very up and up type of thing. And they told me the story. So I never got to speak to him, but I got to speak to them. And he just basically said that he was flown into Roswell about 24 hours after they discovered one of the aliens was still alive, and he tried to communicate with it. It had four fingers. It had large eyes. It was wearing a one-piece jumpsuit. The bodies were shipped to Wright Pat. So, you know, that's apocryphal, but it's in one of my films, that interview with the two people.
And back to rung number four, you talked about that Pentagon.
Yes.
Admission. In fact, it was. I'm looking at it now. A number of portals have reported on this, but one of them I'm looking at is basically saying this was something that was told to a Pentagon hearing or a Pentagon briefing. It's not something that the Pentagon put out in a news release by itself. That's why I was slightly baffled by it. But it's something that was reportedly said in a briefing too, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, the bottom line is, it's deliberate. They're deliberately trickling the stuff out, and they will continue to do so. So at some point, we're looking at full disclosure. And as I said, you know, earlier in the show, that's the game changer. That will change everything. So what are these entities, and where are they really from? And look, Dr. David Jacobs has been involved in the alien implant and abduction phenomena for decades. And we agree that whatever this is going on, it's not a good thing. So, you know, we agree on that. We have a difference of opinion as to who these entities are. But that's why it goes back to the Seed War, which I talked about earlier in the show.
Right. Now, we know that people have differing views on these things, but I think it's pretty established that we seem to be marching towards something, whatever take you have on this, which is a unique time, I think, in our existence. And how long do you think that the answers that you're looking for, that you think will verify the research that you've done, do you think that they will come within your lifetime? Do you hope that they will come within your lifetime?
I think, well, let me back up a little bit. If you had told me that in 2017, Commander David Traver would sort of spill the beans, I fell out of my chair. I mean, I was on the phone after the interview immediately to a really close friend of mine, Gary Stearman, and we conversed because he saw the same thing. We conversed for an hour. We couldn't believe what we were watching. We could not believe what we were watching. So things are accelerating. It's not going to go away, although it could. It sort of disappeared, you know, on rung number five last year in June when the Pentagon released the 9-page
interim report. Yes.
Yeah. But then we had 6, 7, 8, 9.
The unclassified.
Very, very. So, you know, look, I don't have a crystal ball. I'm not a prophet. I watch like crazy, and my hand is on, you know, the pulse of what is happening.
Do you have in your possession? This is a strange question. But you've probably been asked it before. Do you have in your possession any artifacts of or remnants of the Nephilim?
Well, when we took the DNA sampling out of Peru, and I'll tell you something, and I haven't told many interviewers this. I was under a supernatural oppression for probably 3 to 4 years after 2013.
Supernatural oppression. What do you mean? You think you were cursed?
I was under oppression. Absolutely. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. No doubt. And I eventually, it got to the point where, I'll tell you the story. I mean, you can do with it what you wish. But I went to the God of the Bible after about 4 years, and I said, I can't do this anymore. I can't live under the oppression. I can't live under the attack. I'm going to lay it down. I'm not going to do this. I said, I need a sign. I need a sign for that you want me to continue in the research. Okay. So I live by the ocean, as you know, as a crow flies, I'm about a mile and a half. I'm about 1,200 feet above sea level. about a mile and a half from the beach. So at this point in time, I was running. I'd go down and I'd run 2, 4, 6 miles, whatever. And I've been living here since 1974. I saw one whale in 45 years. Okay. And I had to run to it. It was further up the beach and I ran to it. It was out there a good distance, but I saw it and it breached. One whale in like 45 years. So, you know, I'm down there that day, and of course, I don't see a whale. And I get in my car, and I'm driving back, and I'm looking in the rearview mirror, and there's no whale. And I'm driving up my canyon, and there's no whale. Next day, I go down. I park my car. I hop over the fence. I'm in an asphalt parking lot. The asphalt parking lot's about 50 yards wide, and then there's a seawall. On the other side of the seawall is the beach. Another 50 yards after that is the ocean. And I'm looking right at the ocean. And I'm not making this up. Directly in front of me, as I'm walking towards the ocean to start my run, not to the left, not to the right, I mean directly, right in front of my eyes, impossible to miss, and very close to shore, probably less than 30 yards, I mean really close to shore, not one, not two, but three whales breach all at the same time. Now, you know, the skeptic will say, oh, that's just a coincidence, and that you just wanted that to happen, and that's why it happens. And then believe what you want to believe. I don't care. But that changed my life.
Well, listen, I'm not going to take you to task about that, because I'm sure that odd things happen and people can take their own view as to why that might have been. So that's why you're continuing the work. We're running out of time, Ellie. So just can you summarize for me what you're working on at the moment so we can let people know about that?
Part three of the ongoing UFO phenomenon, lots of testimonies, lots of pictures and all sorts of real cool stuff like that. We're also working on episode 8 of Amitrail of the Nephilim, and it's called Out of Place Artifacts, which, you know, you mentioned, you know, where are the artifacts? Well, We're going to show you what some of the artifacts. Certainly it's not exhaustive, but we'll show you some of them. And I think you'll find that really interesting.
Well, I will, because even if you've only got a few of them, that's got to be something that's worth engaging with, I would say, Ellie. Hey, listen, thank you very much for talking with me again. I think we both appreciate it's a difficult path that you tread, but then, you know, nothing was ever achieved by doing things the easy way, I think I found in my life. If people want to communicate with you, perhaps to ask you questions about what you said or whatever, is there a way that they can do that? Do you welcome questions from people?
Yeah, absolutely. Go to la@lamarzulli.net, la@lamarzulli.net. And, you know, we're swamped with emails. But also, if you have a sighting, We have a brand new show called Supernatural Confrontation. You can write me your sighting or your supernatural experience at supernatural@lamarzulli.net, supernatural@lamarzulli.net. And we do Zoom chats and interviews with people, and, you know, you come on the show.
Okay, I look forward to seeing those, even if they are the most fragmentary pieces that give us some clues as to the bona fides of the Nephilim. I personally can't wait for that. Ellie, thank you very much.
Thank you, Howard. Appreciate it.
Your thoughts welcome on Ellie Marzulli. Of course, this is a field where I think we can say, at its mildest, not everybody agrees. But then that is what makes the world go round, isn't it? If we all agreed about everything, then the world would be an extremely boring and not very illuminating place, I would say. More great guests in the pipeline here at the Home of the Unexplained. So until next we meet, my name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained Online. And please, whatever you do, stay safe, stay calm. Above all, please stay in touch. I'm going to go and have a nice, long, cold drink now. Take care. Bye-bye.